Right, okay, good evening. Now, first of all, let me explain what this book is. We've got a few photocopied pages, but it's a sort of a thick book that we study here in this in Project L'Chaim. We study the Seder of the Week first, which you just heard from Rabbi Citron, and then Tanya, and that's the second session, and the men have the same session, the same pattern. And Tanya is a book written 200 years ago, and it was written by Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Ladi, who was a great leader of Hasidism in the third generation. He founded the Chabad branch of Hasidism, but also what he wrote was something meaningful to all of the Hasidic movement, because this is in a very compact way, he is presenting the teachings of the inner dimension of Torah. You see, there is the practical dimension of Torah, which is what we have to do, the laws, how you run a Jewish home, that you have milk and meat separate in the kitchen, and that when it comes to Shabbat, a woman lights Shabbat candles and no work is done, and you make the stove in a special way because we don't cook on Shabbat, but we can keep things warm overnight, and all the different rules and very beautiful practices. That's Jewish law. That's part of the practical side of Judaism. Then we have the discussions of Jewish law, how you come to understand that this is the rule and not that. And that is in the Talmud. Now, the Talmud is very complicated, very beautiful, and it also has many stories. The purpose of the stories in the Talmud are to inspire people. And so parallel to the laws which are in the Talmud is also the inspiration from the Talmud. And that inspiration is also written in deeper books as well. And that finally comes down, the origin of those deeper books is what's called Kabbalah. But we're not studying Kabbalah, we're studying Hasidic teachings, which takes the inner dimension, this inspiration of the Torah, and makes it accessible to us. So the difference between Kabbalah and Hasidic teachings could be described as the difference between learning how to be a surgeon and open someone up and do something or other, you know, which only a very, very highly trained person is able to do, compared with using the same rules of medicine in order to have a nutritious diet and how to look after oneself, and knowing that one needs exercise, or one needs this, or one needs that. You know, in other words, using medical teachings, which are based on very, very subtle experimental discoveries, in order to live a better life. Right? So it's different to actually being a surgeon who takes those medical teachings and puts them into practice in a sort of very crucial way, which only he can do. And if anyone else tries to do it, they're going to land up in prison. So that's Hasidic teachings. And the first section of Tanya, and Tanya is a very, very compact and profound way of presenting Hasidic teachings. It's a book which has been published many, many times, and it's studied all over the world. You can go on the web and you can find the text of Tanya with explanations, and you can even get audio shiurim where you can hear Tanya being explained.
Where does the name Tanya come from?
Now, the word Tanya comes from the very first word of the book. And when you are discussing something in the Talmud, very often we say, Tanya, we learn something or other. Tanya means we've learned. We learn in a section of the Talmud. So we have learned such and such. So the book Tanya begins with a quotation from the Talmud. And the quotation is about the soul, just before it comes into the world. It is told, be a tzaddik, be a righteous person, and don't be a wicked person. Now, what does it mean, righteous and wicked? Does that just mean keeping the rules or not keeping the rules? Well, the author of Tanya, Rabbi Shneur Zalman, discusses that. He said, look, there's keeping the rules, and a person might keep the rules, but that doesn't yet make them completely what is called a tzaddik, a righteous person. Because a person may keep the rules, and this is very highly commendable, they are trying to keep the rules, and they are keeping the rules, but they have inside them a terrible struggle going on, which is trying to pull them the other way. And that's what most people are like. But there are some people who are called a tzaddik, a righteous person, a very special, a tzaddik is a man and a tzaddekes is a woman, that they actually transform themselves inside so that there is nothing pulling them away from keeping Torah teaching. In fact, that is what they love and that is what they enjoy. Now, we can train ourselves to that to a certain extent. And that is a goal of educating children and of daily life, that we try and live like civilized people and like spiritual people. But but there is further levels, and that's what makes some people very, very special, that their whole approach to life, the way they look at things, is just different because they only see it in a sacred and a positive way. So we don't imagine, most of us are like that, but we, and in fact we recognize that we have struggles going on inside us. And one of the key things about the book Tanya is that a person who thinks that they're very religious should be able to recognize inside themselves that there are struggles going on. And then they are able to deal with those struggles a little bit better and advance a little bit. And rather than fool oneself and think that one is perfect. So a person studying Tanya might start off feeling, oh, well, I'm doing everything I'm supposed to be doing, so I'm really a perfect person. Then as they study Tanya a bit more, as they study Tanya a little bit more, they realize that it's quite true. There's a big struggle going on inside them, and this is something that they have to come to terms with and try to work a little bit harder. Okay?
I don't know anyone who thinks that they're that from. Maybe I'm mixing in the wrong circles.
Do you know somebody that perfect?
No, and I don't know.
No, Tava's saying she doesn't know anyone who thinks that they're perfect. Well, that just shows what sound friends you've got.
Well, I don't know. Some people are very conceited and they're vain. They do think they've got it or they know it all.
No, Tava only knows.
But that's people not true, is it?
She only knows truthful, genuine people.
I'm not one. No, there are people who've got this ego that they do really think, you know, that they've done it and they've been there, done it, and nothing more to do.
I suppose that's what Tanya presents. The sort idea that there's a lot more to discover.
Do.
Yeah, yeah, there's more. What's it?
It's no, a contradiction.
Will I ever do it?
I thought that was the whole point. We're supposed to be trying to get rid of our ego.
Well, we're trying to transform our ego, make it transparent so that you can see the godliness inside the person.
I know.
Yes. You see, now one of the teachings of Tanya.
Some people give you a compliment instead of saying thanks. You said just say
what? That's nice. So one of the teachings of Tanya is, or like the theme, is about the soul inside each person. And looking at other people as souls is a very nice way of looking at other people, a very positive way, and you see that this person is deeply spiritual, even though that doesn't always show itself. Right? Sometimes people can be difficult, but they have a spiritual dimension within, and if you think about that, you can be more aware of that. And also oneself. We tend to be very negative sometimes about ourselves. And if we can see that we have a spiritual dimension and that we have to try and work on that spiritual dimension, help it express itself. You know, like imagine if you knew a young person who wants to paint, but no one's giving them the opportunity. And you help that young person express themselves. So there's the divine soul inside a Jew which wants to express itself. It might be by painting spiritual pictures, but it might also be by keeping Shabbat and lighting Shabbat candles and eating kosher and praying to God and feeling spiritual and doing mitzvot and giving charity. And that's what the soul wants to do. That's what the divine soul wants to do. And there's also an animal soul. Now the animal soul just wants to eat and be comfortable and all the different things that the animal side of a person is likely to want to do.
And like go to bed, like sleep. Sleep.
Animals sleep. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
they,
well, yeah. Much of the time animals sleep and so eat. They're either just sleeping or eating. But animals can, the animal side of a person, I mean, it can be doing quite complicated things. You know, it might be, like what sometimes happens, that someone is, they're writing a book, but really what they're writing is someone else's thing that they have found, and they're pretending that it's theirs, you know. You know, so. That's right, plagiarism. So, and that's
like an iguana or something. I'm trying to think of an animal equivalent to that. An iguana, that animal that changes its colour. Like
a chameleon.
Chameleon.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, it's an interesting idea that the chameleon is the first plagiarism.
but there is some truth in that, because we have got different facets to ourselves.
Yes.
Haven't we?
Yes, you're right. Yes.
But that,
you
yeah.
know, and we're not always. You can get a mood that is different to what you have that mood, maybe that.
Well, what Tanya says, the reason why we get into different moods is partly because there are different forces pulling us in different ways, and sometimes one is on top, and then sometimes the other is on top.
It's like a battle between the intellect and the emotions, and there's this whole world of like. This whole subject now that's kind of really fashionable of emotional intelligence.
Well, yes, it's a battle between the intellect and emotions, but also there are different types of emotion. There are spiritual emotions and there are animal emotions.
That's right. That
you
too.
See, it can be an emotion of love.
Yeah.
And there can be love which is holy, which is appropriate.
Yeah.
And there's love which is not holy and is not appropriate.
Yeah.
You know, so
well, then, and then there's all those other things that can kind of interfere with that, like jealousy.
Yes.
Can fool a person into thinking that it is love when it's absolutely not.
Okay.
Love.
Okay. So there are lots of complex things that can come up.
But right. are there so many? It seems like maybe there's maybe boil it down to maybe, I don't know, not so many.
Well, there are seven sphera. There are seven spiritual emanations. These are aspects of the divine. And within each person, there are these aspects of the divine as well. And so they are, there are seven. There are three intellectual aspects and seven emotional aspects. The intellectual aspects are Chochmah, wisdom, Bina, the understanding, and that knowledge. Now Chochmah, Chet, Bet, and Dalet, that makes Chabad, and that's why the Chabad movement is called Chabad, because it focuses on the intellectual side of Jewish thought, Jewish spiritual thought. Now the wisdom means inspiration. The understanding means contemplation. Rabbi Sitchin was talking about prayer, moving from Moda'ani to contemplating and feeling a whole range of intense and deep feeling. That's from Bina, contemplation, understanding. And that Knowledge means taking something very seriously, seeing it as real, caring, becoming involved, becoming committed. So you can learn about, you can hear about a certain problem. You can think about it and see all kind of different aspects to it. And suddenly you become very concerned, you're going to do something about it. So that's wisdom, understanding and knowledge, that you're actually going to do something about it. You're going to change things or try to change things. So there we have wisdom, understanding and knowledge, and then we have the emotions. So there is, in order for seven, there's kindness, which means giving. That's basically what kindness is, giving. You know, you're a kind person, you give. You give time, you give charity. You give empathy. Yes, you are giving something of yourself to the other person. Now there's severity, which is holding back. And sometimes the right thing is to hold back even for the benefit of the other person. It might be too much. You may have a wonderful idea in your mind and you want to tell it to the other person, and it's got to 2 o'clock in the morning and they're looking at their work and they want to go home, they want to go to bed. But no, you want them to understand this one. So you need a bit of gvura, of severity.
You do have to have some, because if you've got to bring up a family, you've got to have some sort of a structure, some discipline there, haven't you?
Absolutely.
With your children.
Well, you might have a little boy and he's playing with something.
Like a
box of matches. That's right.
Could be.
Now, are you a kind parent or a severe parent? Oh, you know, do you let him play with a box of matches? No. You say, come here, just give me that box of matches. And he starts crying and arguing. But you are being kind by being severe. And that's an interesting thing, that these qualities are intermingled. You've got the kindness within severity and the severity within kindness. So they are intermingled.
Absolutely.
And when you get them at the right balance, kindness and severity, it becomes mercy. And mercy...
In the right balance, did you say?
Yes, the right balance. The right balance of giving and withholding. Mm. And you're giving in the right proportion, and when it's appropriate to give, you give, and when it's not, you don't. And that means you have mercy, that you are more modulated in your relationship with the person and you care about the person. And that means maybe you do give them or maybe you don't give them. Is it the best thing to give them? Maybe instead of just giving them what they want at this minute, they need to go on a course and study, they need to build up their lives in a better way. So you might try to help them in a way that at this moment all they want is some money. But what you want to do is to try and help them in a more long-term way, possibly. Yeah, so that's mercy. Then there is victoriousness. The will to victory. Now that's a very powerful element in people. It's the mainstay of the Olympic Games. And a lot of other aspects of life, the business world, trying to be on top. But it's also an important element in very, very positive spiritual relationships. The determination to try, let's say in a teaching situation, you know, so thank God we're sitting here, we're learning together. Now what would happen if the lights would suddenly go off? We'd say, oh no, you know, does that mean we've got to cancel the study class? No, we're going to find some candles. We're going to have the study class anyway. We're going to get over the difficulty.
That would be nicer anyway.
It could be. I knew someone who always wanted to study by candlelight. So he would come to my house bringing candles. Like long drip-free candle. At least they were drip. But, and what would happen if the government would forbid us from studying Torah? As they did in Soviet Russia. You couldn't have, in 1980, you could not have a class like this in Soviet Russia.
I heard that we also had to wear the peaked cap, baseball cap, so that we couldn't look up to the heavens, and Newton turned the cap round. So I didn't realise we were the ones that introduced the turning of the cap round.
Yeah, that was earlier on. That was at an earlier stage. Yeah, like in Tsarist times, I think, the thing about that.
What, they wore baseball caps and Zara?
Well, they wore like a peaked cap, like a railway driver's cap. Okay. That's, yeah. Yeah. So that is the will to victory, and also a challenge. If you're teaching a class, they don't understand what you're saying, so you try to find the right story which explains it, or the right metaphor, you know, like, or maybe it's drawing a picture on the blackboard, you know, like something or other that will explain it. And then there is submission. See, there's victory, and the corresponding emotion is submission.
Surrender.
Now, surrender is a very important emotion. And it's very important in relationships between people, because sometimes you're giving and sometimes you're taking. And you have to be able to listen to another person. You stop talking. You listen to what the other person is saying. You've got to be able to hear the other person. And in order to have a proper relationship, you need both to be able to give and to be able to take and to listen. And then comes another quality called dedication. That's the sixth quality.
What's that in Hebrew?
Yesod.
And what was the one before?
Hod.
Okay.
And Yesod, dedication, that's like the foundation. Yesod in Hebrew means foundation. It's the real bond between people, that they care about each other. It's the bond in a marriage, it's a bond in all relationships, that someone cares about the other person, they take responsibility for the other person, and that is this bond. And finally you have Malchus, which is kingship, which is the feminine. Now all the other divine emanations, all the other emotional qualities are seen as moving towards the feminine, where it connects together and it becomes real. That's the point of reality. You could compare it to an old-fashioned projector, like a film, shining the image, and there's a screen. And if you didn't have the screen, you wouldn't be able to see anything. It's when there's a screen, then you can see what is in the rays of light. So there are the different qualities of rays: kindness, severity, mercy, victory, submission, dedication. And then you have the Malchus, kingship, the feminine, where it's all revealed and concretized and it becomes a reality. Now that's a faculty of every person, men and women, that they need this ability to concretize things. You could have someone who has wonderful ideas but can never get anything done, because they haven't got that faculty of concretizing it, of bringing it to the
because there's too many forms to fill in, that's why. Otherwise you could. But can I just ask you what Malchut actually emotionally relates to?
I think it's crystallization. You know, it's the ability to take all the different things that are going on in your head and in your heart and make it into something practical.
So is that last one not really an emotional thing?
It's interesting. In a way, it's the sum of all of them. It's the sum of the intellect and of the emotions. It's the most crucial quality, because it's that which makes it real. Just as in real life, the feminine is, the woman is the one who brings the baby into the world, and that is the reality. That's the ultimate reality. You could have the most wonderful love poems or whatever, but the reality is a real baby in the world and a real home, and the idea of a woman running the home and creating a home and making something beautiful. So that's this point of reality. So it's a mixture both of intellect, emotion, will, which is higher than intellect. And in fact, the highest emanation is called the crown, Keter, and that relates to the will. And the crown of kingship, that relates to the lowest level, which is the feminine at the bottom, which is achieving it. So that's the way, it's a whole circle. And all these other qualities are in between.
And do they relate to the chakras in the body?
Well, it relates to the physical body.
Yeah.
Right? So chakras are a, you know, from another tradition. And there are people who say it corresponds very closely. You know, I haven't examined that. But certainly the physical body itself expresses this. So, for example, kindness represents the right arm, the right hand, and severity is the left hand. You know, so there's a sense in which the physical body manifests certain aspects of these different dimensions.
Is the will the highest point?
Sorry about myself.
Do you think
it is? In a way, it is, but higher than will is delight. Will is what you can easily communicate to another person. You can say, I want to achieve such and such a thing. But the delight that you feel when you have achieved it, that you can't communicate. You can tell them.
Is that before will or after the malchus?
It's higher than will.
It's higher.
It's higher than will, but the highest level is joined to the lowest, because it's when you get down to malchus and you achieve it,
then
you get the delight.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think the will is when you said, look, I'll do something, and you've managed to do it, and when you've done it, you feel happy that you've done it. Is that something that is real?
Yeah.
Is that the light?
Well, that's it depends what you're doing.
Yes, I know, that's quite
it could be a very positive thing.
Yeah.
And that is a very real range of emotions. Or a person might be doing, you know, the thief who manages to get the safe open.
I don't mean in a horrible way. I mean in something that you do, that need to do. You've got to do it, and you need to do it, and you maybe don't feel like you want to do it, and you've got to do it, and you've got to conquer this thing, and you do it, and if you've done it, you feel you've achieved something, maybe. Am I right, wrong?
Well,
I don't know. Is that light? Is it right, wrong?
The point is, really, that it depends what you're doing. And the person might be doing something very, very important, very positive. They might be doing something which is not so tremendously important, but it's nice for them, and nothing wrong with it. Or, God forbid, they might
God
be doing
forbid.
Something
oh,
not
yeah.
so good.
God
you
God
know,
forbid.
So it all... But the range of emotions are similar. And that's the interesting thing, that the pattern of emotions have a certain similarity, even though it might be a positive thing or a negative thing.
That's right.
Yes, someone writing a very nice poem feels a delight. And there might be someone doing something which really, you know, is against the law, and they're very happy they, you know, they managed to achieve that.
Yes.
You could say it's a different kind of delight. One is very coarse and one is more pure. But there are certain structures which are similar. And what we're trying to do is refine ourselves and move to more and more spiritual structures. And so we're able to see what things are like on a more practical plane, and then try and move that into something more spiritual.
Can I just make a point?
Yes.
Because what is interesting of what you said about how delight is above will. Now, I'm doing a little bit of research into quantum physics right now.
Wow.
And no, not really, because it's like quantum physics for dummies. But basically, it's more or less saying that you can change your life in any way you want, as long as there's one thing, that you overcome your addictions, which may be to emotional people or to substances or to a way of life. And in, you know, say in a religious sphere, if you are always used to going shopping on Shabbos and then suddenly you have to stop that, you know, that's one of the addictions that you would have to overcome. And this thing about the desire being above the will, because really it doesn't make sense. Really, the will, the desire will come, like you said, at the end, once you have achieved. The delight will come at the end, once you've achieved your objective. But I can see why the desire, the delight, comes beginning, because that is actually, in some ways, the addiction.
Mm.
Now, it could become a positive thing, right?
Mm.
You are then addicted to going to shul and shabbos, and you don't want to do the other thing. But the actual idea of the delight that you are going to obtain at the end is what makes... Because really, an addiction is that...
The habit.
Yeah, but it's more than that. There's this craving thing, okay?
Yeah, but there's one step further. It's very interesting because even in positive things, where there is delight, it's as if we are not focused on the delight. You know what's one of the most beautiful experiences in life? Is a table set with a white tablecloth and two candles on the table and two challah loaves covered with a cloth and a bottle of Jewish wine and a goblet, and you are celebrating Shabbat. And that's one of the most beautiful, beautiful sights and beautiful experiences. But you're not doing it because you're chasing that experience. You're doing it because it's Shabbat, it's coming to Shabbat, and this is the way you organize it, and you get the challah, the two breads, and you get the wine, and you get the candles, and you put them in, and before sunset, quarter of an hour, 18 minutes before sunset, you light the candles, you say the blessing, you do it in a traditional way, and it's something beautiful. But you're doing it because it's the right thing to do, and because you're a Jewish person, and a Jewish woman has got the power to bring peace into the world by lighting these candles. So you're not actually doing it because of the feeling of delight, but there is the feeling of delight. You know, it's, you know.
You
so
mean you're doing it because it's a mitzvah?
You're doing it because it's a mitzvah, and because this is what the Torah says we should do, and this
yeah,
is
but then
how.
Where does the delight come into?
Well, you see, the delight comes there in a unnoticed.
Because for me personally, the delight comes from entering a different dimension of Shabbos and then leaving all that drossy material stuff behind. That is the delight for me. It's not about the candles or the challahs or the wine or the table. I'd be quite happy not to eat all day Shabbos. That wouldn't bother me. Don't tell Mrs. Markowski I said that, right?
Well, let me just suggest a possible scenario.
Okay.
Is that you're travelling from London to Manchester. And it's on a Friday, and you started off 10 o'clock in the morning. You were supposed to get to Manchester at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and Shabbat comes in at 6 o'clock. But halfway through, the train stops, this happens, that happens, and it comes out that suddenly you are in, or someone is in, the middle of nowhere, and it's Shabbat. And they now have to try to, as it were, create a Shabbat atmosphere in this place, which is the middle of nowhere. Like they're on a little side station, which somehow the train got shunted to, you know, Little Dipping or something. And there you are. A friend of mine had to spend the whole of Shabbat in Heathrow Airport because the plane he took on a Wednesday actually just got delayed and delayed, and it landed somewhere else, and then it was supposed to come finally when it landed in Heathrow. It was just before Shabbat, and he got off the plane, and here he is in the airport, and it's Shabbat.
What did and he do?
He stayed like just with a few chairs around him, and he parked himself there for the whole of Shabbat, and that's where he was, and that's where he prayed. And that's where, and he had two like wafers with him or something, you know, and he said Kiddush, and he did everything. He didn't have any wine, but if you don't have wine, you can make Kiddush on bread. So he managed to like recreate the whole Shabbat concept, even though the ordinary idea of what physical comfort goes into Shabbat wasn't there at all. You know.
So that's sort of...
Well, that is saying what you're saying. Yes, yeah, that it goes beyond...
Because those things are fantastic. Especially when someone else has done all the work, right, all week, and you just turn up as the guest on Friday night. Then it's really fantastic. If you've actually been doing all that hard work yourself, you're a bit tired, actually, to appreciate it all. But anyway, that's another point. And it's all there like a miracle... Whether it's because you've done it all week and prepared it, or someone else has been so kind as to invite you. And that is fantastic, yeah.
Okay.
But why is the delight at the bottom, at the top?
Because the end is joined in the beginning, and the beginning is joined in the end. So in other words, the You know, if you're asking a person, why are you doing this? You say, listen, this is something extremely meaningful.
I think that the delight is equivalent, sort of, in a sort of a way, to like the delight that a child has when they want to give their parent knockers. So, like, you know, it's like on some level, like, you know, we, like, you know, we're Jews and it's a commandment and it's, we are, you know, it's a commandment. Mm. It's what Hashem wants. And who's Hashem? Hashem's our father. So we're like children and we give our father knockers. Mm. And that's how we take delight in, we know it's what he wants.
It's simplicity.
And how we please. You know, okay, we do it because, yeah, for sure, you know, we get a lot of pleasure from that. We're not, it's not just all just, it's not an act of, but he gave us Shabbos. We like, you know what I mean? Something like that.
All right, that's very
because
beautiful.
Because that delight is we, beyond the
we have
the
to draw
oh,
our
yes,
session to a close because
hey,
it is. Yeah, we have. Sorry, we didn't get on to that. Yeah.
I think that the difference between Friday night and the candles is the difference between that and every other night.
Mm.
And
yeah.
Every other night, you know it's different,
well, it's that beautiful
and you feel
thing
it's different,
mm-hmm.
And it's
separation.
Beautiful. If you, and you've been brought up like that from when you were small,
or even if not,
and you always recognise this is the lovely thing. Oh, lovely! This is the time of the week that's different.
Beautiful, yeah.
And that's
yeah.
The night that it yeah. Is a pleasure just to see those you've done. Oh, this is Shabbat now. You know, whatever one, and even if there's some people, their religious observance isn't that high. It's funny thing, Jewish people don't go out on Shabbos Friday night.
You're right. Yeah, that's one of the.
It's a funny thing.
They're not
that,
so observant, but one thing they do is stay out.
It's a strange thing about yeah. Jewish people that do not go out on Friday night.
Well, that is a measure of tradition which is still there.
It's
sometimes,
still there.
Yeah, but
definitely.
Sometimes people don't have. We must draw to a close because really it's getting late. It's been lovely
All right.
discussing with you.
Thank you very much. Yes, it's been lovely. Yeah.